Good morning, everyone, and welcome into another episode of the Found Generation podcast, a podcast for young people. Joining you today from snowy Calgary, Canada, currently en route to Kahlua Beach, Hawaii, coming from London in the midst of a 21-hour layover, which Kelsey booked, not me. Terrible idea on her part. She is not joining me on the show today. Finally, it is instead another one of my best friends in the world, Sarah Rose, who joined me live from London. We spent the last couple of days together, and it was truly an honor to get to know her, to learn from her, as you will on today's episode. I first met Sarah about a year and a half ago via MMA Twitter. She is a big fan of the podcast that I work on, and I had her on the show last summer, I believe in June or July, and it was one of the most inspiring yet heartbreaking conversations that I've ever had with someone. It's one of the most moving conversations I've ever had on this podcast. And since that moment, I knew I have to be friends with this woman. She's incredibly intelligent, as you'll find out, incredibly well-spoken, a beautiful soul inside and out who has endured so much. We won't get into it on today's conversation like we did last time. Strongly recommend you go back and listen to it if you haven't heard it, but she spent years battling addiction. She spent time in the psych ward. She has experienced depression. She has all sorts of physical ailments that hold her back still to this day. And it was really an honor to get to spend some time with her in London and to get to have her on today's show. So without further ado, here's my best friend, Sarah Rose, live from London. I hope you enjoy. Thank you for being here in London. You've been here the last few days.
Thank you for letting me be here in London.
It has been the pleasure of a lifetime to have you here, and I can't wait to make this a thing where we just go. You also love to travel, where we just go fun places and do fun things. You live in Virginia Beach. I'm going to have to make it down there at some point.
Yes.
What has your experience in London been like? You've been here for a couple days.
Okay, well, I think we've done the extremes. We've talked about this. We've done the most posh and we've done the grimiest. And I love both. Definitely leaning toward grimy. Love a good sticky bar. That was really important to me. Sticky, like you put your hands down on the bar. When you pick it up, you have to like pry it off because it gets like stuck on the bar.
Yeah.
Went to Sky Garden, which was the opposite of a sticky bar. I don't think I've ever been anywhere fancier in my entire life.
I think it was being at Sky Garden
that
made you want to go to the sticky bar. Because I think you stepped foot in Sky Garden and were like, I need sticky right now. I need to be reminded of where I come from.
It was nice though. Don't get me wrong. I really did enjoy being absurdly overly posh for about, an hour and a half? That was great. Really enjoyed it. And then afterwards I was like, all right, I'm ready to be a degenerate again. We need to get out of here. This is not, no mas. But no, it's been delightful. Love public transport. Big fan of public transport. We don't have that in Virginia Beach or Virginia at all. Definitely not like here. We were comparing it to the subway in New York. Comparatively cleaner, just as disgusting though. You come home, wipe your face, it is covered in dirt. 100% of the time. But no, it's been amazing. We've stayed in two different areas so far. I feel like we've covered a lot of ground since we've been here.
We have covered a lot of ground. That's my favorite part.
London's bigger than I thought.
It's pretty massive. Oh, and I mean, you've only scratched the surface of what you've seen. I'm not a city guy, but the qualities in a city I love London has, like being able to walk everywhere, being able to take the tube to any corner of the city, pretty much within 45 minutes, you can get to most places that you would ever want to go, which is pretty sweet.
No, I agree. And it's so much like, I don't know, I feel like in New York, getting from place to place is like an ordeal. Like it's like, all right, we got to get from point A to point B. It's not, I know some people, this is different. Other people might, you know, like to stroll in New York City. I'm not. If I'm in New York City getting from point A to point B, I am with a purpose. I'm walking faster than anyone you've ever seen in your freaking life. Like I'm going from point A to point B. I'm not stopping to look around. Like, well, you're looking around, but you're not actually like taking your time, you know? Here, every time we go anywhere, it's a stroll, you know? Troy and I have taken quite a few strolls where we just talk and we stop and look at things. That's been amazing. Not planning everything. This has been good. We just kind of go where the wind takes us. Literally, it's cold as shit. and end up where we end up, which has been amazing. But no, I love London. I love the way that it's, as you said, like it's so easy to get around. It's so easy to just to stroll and to end up wherever. It's not like you're gonna, getting lost is not a bad thing in London.
You're a big planner. I also am a big planner, but you take it to the nth degree. You should see the alarm clocks that this woman has set for every little action. So with that, you like control. You like being in control of your situation. But when you live in a place like London, things aren't always in your control. Mm-mm. How do you deal with when things don't go exactly according to plan?
I think I'm a malleable person. It's just that if you're within 5 feet of me, you're going to have a bad time because I can adapt. Like I can pivot. That's something my therapist and I talk about all the time. I have the ability to pivot very well in basketball and real life. But like it's the 5 minutes in between something going wrong and the pivoting where if you're in the near vicinity to me, you just have to deal with the fastest because I plan down to the minute. It's everything is planned to the minute. So then if something goes wrong, you have to hear me reconfigure the whole day's plan really fast, out loud usually, and thinking that like for about 5 minutes, it sounds like the world is ending because I'm just like, okay, well, this has to go here. I have to move this back 3 minutes. The train's going to take this long. This is going to take that long. I have to move this here, this there. And then how am I going to get here by this time? And it always works out because I'm fucking good at it. I'm really good at pivoting, planning, and I always give myself wiggle room so that if things go wrong, that's why if you invite me to anything, I'm going to be there early, most likely, or at least in the area to give myself time so that if things go wrong, one of the best pieces of advice I ever got was my dad telling me, like when people would say they're late because of traffic, he's like, no, they're late because they didn't leave early enough to consider traffic. That's on them. That's not traffic's fault. Like, you know traffic exists. You know it's unpredictable. That's why you always leave so early that no matter how bad the traffic is, you're either early or you're at least on time. You're never late if you're considerate of that. And so I always leave wiggle room. And when things don't go right, I don't – there is like a five-minute freak out, and it's just me rearranging everything. I have Google Calendar, so I'll be literally sitting there for 5 minutes just like rearranging things. And then I also will go in my notes app and make it so it's like 3 to 3:15, 3:15 to 3:24, 3:24, and I will write it all out. But once I have done that, we're back. We're good. We're good again.
How do you get through every day? And when I ask that, I mean,
I don't.
when we spoke on the last podcast, you've been through a lot in your life. You are 21 years old, but you've lived the life of like 38-year-old, many different eras to your life, as the kids say. Mm. A lot of health issues. You've had some mental issues in the past as well. How do you deal? How do you get through every single day?
I think that's the key word, is every single day. Like, you take it day by day, which sounds so hypocritical to everything I just said about planning. But it really is taking it day by day. Like, I have no idea. So with health issues, especially, I have no idea if I'm going to wake up tomorrow and be like on my deathbed. Like, I have no control over, I mean, I have control over my health, but like there are some things with my health, especially, that are out of my control. I can do everything right and it can still be bad. Same thing with mental health. If you have mental health issues, if you ever struggled with your mental health, you know that you can meditate every day, do all of the things that every professional has said will help you. And there's still just going to be days where you wake up and you're like, I brushing my teeth right now is a fucking chore. Like, this is a lot. And so it really is taking it day by day and giving yourself grace. And I think for me, what helps me get through each day is scheduling. Like, that helps me. It helps me hedge anxiety. Preparation is my anxiety cure. I am working on finding that balance to not hyper-schedule to the point where it then becomes the cause of anxiety once again. That's something that's helped me. But also just every day when I'm waking up, I have a plan. And it's not always, don't get me wrong, like I hyper-schedule a lot of my days because I have a lot of shit to do most days. But if I have a day where I don't have things to do, my plan is still, okay, I've taken care of the things I need to take care of. Like, knowing that I have taken I checked off the things I need to do, helps me get through each day. And it leaves room for things like not coloring in all the spaces on the planner. It leaves room for going to the park. Something I've been doing a lot better with is like, yeah, I have a plan, but because I leave so much room, then like on the way to something that I need to do, if it's a beautiful day out and I'm driving past a park, I'll stop and I'll go. Or like in Norfolk where I go to university, there's a lot of cool like shops, museums, things like that. And I can't tell you the amount of times where I have something I have to go do and I'm like, I also need to stop and go to this museum. Like that's something that needs to happen. It's giving priority to things that do help you get through the day. And it's the little things. I hate that that is such a like cliche saying, but Troy knows if I don't have a little freaking pastry with my coffee, it's the end of the world because it's those little things that get me through the day. And however those little things manifest themselves to you. But no, like it's not, I don't wake up every day like this is so easy. This is great. I've done all my things. I can get through the day. But knowing what I value, what I enjoy, and what I like, which has taken time to figure out because you spend a lot of time, I think, especially in your teen years, like applying others' values and things that they enjoy to yourself. Finding out what truly, at the end of the day, makes your soul happy and what you want to do for yourself, which often means doing it alone, is what's gonna help you get through every day. Because I don't know, like what are we doing if we're waking up and we're not finding those little things and finding ways to make it what we want to do every day, you know? Because, you know, like every single day I'm either working or I'm studying or I'm doing research. Those are the only three things I'm ever doing. But in between those, even if it's like 7 minutes, I'm taking the longer route because it's going to make me happy.
I also love the little things. I think that's something that we connect on. However, I, like you, also always have such a big to-do list and just like a lot of long-term goals. There's always something that both of us could be doing to get us closer to our goals. Like that work will never, ever stop. It is an avalanche and there's so many things we want to do as ambitious people. Because of that, there's always this gnawing feeling in the back of my mind when I'm on a walk or in the park trying to enjoy the little things where I'm like, all right, I can't be doing this too long. I have to go do this thing, which gets me closer to my goals and a lot of my other values. How do you kind of shut that gnawing feeling in the back of your head down to just give yourself that grace to be like, all right, no, I need 10 minutes of vitamin D right now. I need 5 minutes of silence right
now. Yeah. Well, I think it's exactly what you said. You need it. Something that you do really well, and I've seen on this trip that has been, I've been taking notes. I watch how you operate and I'm picking things up because what we'll do is we'll go out, do something fun. We'll go take a, like yesterday, we took a really long walk, found a really cool area, got coffee, enjoyed our time, took our time getting back. There was no rush. When we got back, Troy's like, all right, I have to do a little work. So you fit in work where you can, which for your job works really well. He did his work. I took a hot bath because I didn't have shit to do. But no, like you fit things in where you can with work. And I love that. It's because you're not prioritizing it over. It's not like while we're on the walk, you're like, oh, I need to get back right now because I need to do this. You know you need to do it, but you fit it in while you can, where you can. Even at the cafe we went to yesterday, I read my book while Troy got some work done. And that in no way took away from the experience because it was nice to just sit with a friend and like, I wanted to read my book and he needed to do work. So it worked out well. But I think it's exactly what you said about you need it. And this is something that's really hard for me. So this is not me saying, guys, just fucking do it. It's not that hard. Like it's really hard because I am the same way. And that's why I have to write everything down and plan. Like at night, I cannot go to sleep unless I've, because it's the to-do list, right? You have the list of things. And I'm not a nighttime work person. You know, some people, they're like, oh, I have so much to do. And then they're like, well, I'll just stay up and finish it so that I can go to bed. I'm a morning work person, but I have to go to bed to be able to wake up at 5 to finish that to-do list of things. So what that means is being able to fall asleep, which means not having the constantly cycling list of things to do. So before bed, almost every night, I have a typed out list of to-do. I have my calendar that's online, but I will also just like with a notebook next to my bed, write out like, what do I have to do? And do I have time to do it tomorrow? And once I've written that out and the answer is yes, I can go to bed. Because it's like, well, I have to, none of this is going to get done if I don't sleep right now. So let me write it down. I can see it. It's taken out of my mind. It's the same way that when I write, like journaling, right? It's taking it out of your mind and putting it down so that it can take a break from just swirling around up here. That's extremely helpful. And it's the same way with like saying, I need vitamin D right now, right? Some things, and I hate viewing it in terms of productivity because I hate the embedded capitalism that has run my life for the majority of it that I have become more aware of and I'm now avoiding. But these things make us more productive in the long run, right? And like with my health, especially, I got a concussion not that long ago. And I was like, well, I'll take off about half the things on my to-do list, but I have to do the other half. I didn't have to. I could have got a doctor's note, but I didn't. And then that made my recovery that much longer. And then, so instead of having a concussion for a week, I was like dealing with really bad headaches and everything for 2 weeks. And then I had all these other health problems. Things started piling up. And it's like going on the walks, taking the breaks, doing these things will help you in the long run because it's going to allow you to be more stable. It's going to produce more productivity, you know? And I think the more in tune you become with yourself, the more aware, like I will be working on something at the library for 5 hours, but I know myself well enough now that I get to a point and I'm like, all right, and I'll pack up my shit and go to a park, spend as much time as I need there, and then go back and go to another library or coffee shop. Because I think when you become in tune with yourself, you start to know when you need not just a break, but like, you know, to go do something other than the things on the to-do list, right? Like go out and enjoy yourself and not think about all those things. And it's hard to not think about it. That's the toughest part, is to put it on hold. But when you do, it's that feeling of like, it's almost like, it's like a shower, you know, going out and doing things in between your to-do list, doing things that are not like hard and fast requirements to get you farther in life, career, productivity, uni work, anything, is like a cleansing experience. Because if you cannot carry that on you all of the time, because your life, in my opinion, might not be everyone's opinion, my purpose is not to work.
There's so many things that I want to ask you about. I'll go with this one. We're both big quote people. There's one quote I came across from a Tim Ferriss book a couple years ago. I think it was from this guy, BJ Miller. I don't know who he is, but wherever you are, BJ, I hold your words in high regard. It was, "Forget purpose. The quest for purpose has ruined many lives." And I've been thinking about that because all of our lives we're kind of told, you know, what's your passion? What's your purpose? And find that thing and go live that out for the rest of your life. And some people will try and go their whole lives trying to find that purpose, or they'll convince themselves that this thing is their purpose when it's really not. And so what I've been wondering lately is the thing I do right now, as much as I love what I do, I spend the most of my time producing MMA podcasts, which is never in a million years what I envisioned myself to be doing. It's not my purpose. I'm trying to figure out what my purpose is, or do we have one? Do any of us have a purpose? Should we have a purpose? Is the quest for a purpose making life more difficult to enjoy because I'm trying to find this thing and I'm throwing so many darts at the wall to see, is this my purpose? Is this my purpose? And that leads to stress and frustration, and again, all sorts of existential questions. So I want to ask you, do you have a purpose, or is the whole concept of having a purpose meaningless?
Isn't it funny that we never ask if you have purposes? This happens all, I notice this all the time. We're so like adverse to multiplicity and things. We think there's only like one option for everything. When I say we, I specifically am referring to the West. It's always like, it's this or that, you know? And I'm like, what about and? There's a linguist called Derrida who came up with a form of literary critical theory called deconstructionism, and it has to do with a multiplicity of meanings. Every text can be read in multiple ways, deconstructed and re-understood, basically. But after learning that, I've come to believe that in general, most things more often than not lean toward a multiplicity of meanings more than a unity. Like it's, I tend to lean to there's multiple ways to interpret rather than there can only be one. That feels very confining to me in many aspects of life. It feels very confining, but especially in terms of purpose, I think it changes. I think it adapts, and I think there's more than one. If you're someone that finds one purpose, good for you. It's amazing, you know? I also think purpose almost comes with this implied sort of like, what action are you going to do to contribute to other things and other people? And it's like, that's not, that also feels confining, you know? Because I think, as I said, it changes. Like something that I found that is something that I work toward every day. And if that's what we are considering a purpose, like how do we define a purpose? Because for me, if it's something I'm working toward every day for myself, and something that I've been working toward is putting myself at the center of my world. I've never done that in my entire life. But if someone asks me, hey, what's your purpose? What's your passion? And I say, focusing on myself, people can be like, that's really selfish. And be like, yeah, but you don't know that for the past 21 years of my life, I've never done that. And this is like a new thing. And like, there's reasons why this is important to me. Also, like, I think something right now that I'm, or something that's been imbued in me, I guess, from a very young age is like helping others. My mom is a civil servant of sorts. And she's been doing service work her entire life. I've been raised to do service work. That's something that when I was young, people asked, what's your purpose? And I said, helping people. And so that's why I went to do pre-med and all this stuff. And even now, as someone who's like, well, I want to study this. And it's like, well, okay, what are you going to do with studying? And it's like, teach people, you know? So that's something, that's a cop-out answer. Like if I'm like in an interview and they're like, what is your one purpose? You can say to help people, right? Like that's an answer. But I think there's so much more than that. I think there's so much more than that. I don't think it's ever just like one thing. And also I think it's confining. Like I said, like if you tell yourself my purpose is this one thing, it becomes really hard to explore other things. When you start to stray from it, you say, oh, well, I'm not sticking to my purpose. I'm not being myself. And it's like yourself should change often. You should be adapting, changing, being malleable. We have the absolute pleasure and opportunity to be born into this world as humans, right? Like having the ability to think critically, to change, to adapt, to learn. If you really wanted to, you could learn so fucking much every single day, and every single day be a completely different person based on that knowledge. Every single day. And I say if you want to, because I'm not going to sit out here and be like, oh, this is like Plato's time. We can all just go sit in a fucking garden. We have to work because this world is built like that, unfortunately, at the moment. But like finding opportunities in that. You know, finding opportunity in the things you have to do, what can we learn from them? And how can we use that to adapt, find new purposes, new passions? And I think passions is so much better than purposes. Because like I said, purpose has this inherent, like you have to go produce something. You have to go do a thing. You have to be a thing. And that's like one path to one end. Passions is like, let's explore this. Let's do that. Let's learn that. I don't think I'll ever get to a point in my life where I'm like, this is my purpose and nothing else. It might be my passion. It might be my focus. That might be my goal. But if I ever only have one goal in my life, I will be concerned for myself. Because I think it's important to have more than one thing. You need balance.
You said that you are putting the vast majority of your attention on yourself right now.
Trying to. It's not always going well.
How? How are you trying to put all the attention on yourself?
Yeah, I think it's doing exactly what I didn't do for most of my life. So for most of my life, I really spent a lot of my time and attention on the people in my life that I love and care about, putting them in the center. Therefore, all of my actions, everything I do was centered around how can I make them happy? How can I enhance their life? Which is not a bad thing, guys. I encourage enhancing the lives of people around you. But if you are not also working to enhance your own life, that's going to wither very quickly. You can serve from an empty vessel. It's impossible. And I think what I was doing is in helping other people, I thought that that was helping myself, right? I was like, I'm being altruistic, right? That was a Catholic value placed in me at a young age. I'm being altruistic. I'm helping others, which will help me. Yes, but if you're not also doing things just for yourself, you're gonna run into some problems because you're no longer gonna be able to help other people if you don't have anything to give. And I've been withered to skin and bones, literally, metaphorically, emotionally. And you have to have, you have to feed your soul to feed other people. It's absolutely essential. I think one of the most important ways that I'm doing that, and something that I lacked for a long time, I've always been a very passionate person. I've always been like, oh, I want to do this and I want to do that and I want to learn this and all of these things. And I've had a lot, I don't think anyone's ever been like, oh, Sarah lacks drive. Sarah lacks this, like, you know, but I don't think I ever knew. I don't think I ever took the time to fully come to understand exactly what do I like? What do I want? What do I care about? Because I think I knew all those things, but I never really took the time to sit down, sit across the table from them and interact with them. I was like, well, I know that I feel this way and I know that I like this, but let me use those things and focus them on how I can help other people. And instead, I wake up in the morning and I'm like, how do I feel today? We talked about like energies. Troy and I have had a lot of conversation about energies, and I'm a person who wakes up every day with a different sort of position, a different sort of almost archetype. Some days I'm feeling like a dominant, like protector, like I want to be in this role of like leading others, being in control, protecting other people, like walking on the outside of the road where the cars are. And some days I wake up and I feel like a freaking princess and I want to be treated like one, you know?
You are
thank you. And I think, but you can be subconsciously aware of that and not really be in tune with it. And I think putting yourself first requires you to wake up in the morning and say, where am I at? Okay, and what does that mean? Like, what does that mean in terms of what I want to accomplish today? This is also something that's essential to do with your health, I think. Women, cycle tracking, essential. Your hormones, men, you also have hormones, but yours are on a 24-hour cycle. But just in general, waking up, checking in with your health, physically, emotionally, mentally, and really asking yourself, like, what do I need today? Like, something Troy is amazing at. Every single day I've been here, he's like, what can I do for you? What do you need? And that's amazing. And as much as he asks me, I hope you're asking yourself, and I think you do. And it's something, that's something that has been huge on this journey of like putting myself at the center, is asking myself, like, what do you need to feel good today? Now, that comes with a caveat, because my old answer to what do I need to feel good today is a lot of drugs, and because they're fun, but don't do them, because it's not a healthy way of feeling good. And in the long run, you don't feel good. So that's important. When you ask yourself, what do I need to feel good today? And your answer is to go dance and get on a fucking bender. Be like, okay, what do I need to feel good today that will also help me feel good for the rest of the week? I say this to someone who went on a 4-day bender since being in London, but I'm on vacation and it's different. But then we spend time getting green juice and walking and water and a hot bath and tea and saying, how can I recover physically? But that is something in day-to-day life that has vastly improved for me. Even something as simple as going to play basketball, being like, I need to do something that's going to make my soul feel good. And there are going to be sacrifices that come with that, right? Like, I am not in a position to, you know, necessarily pay for all the things that might make me feel good. But like, you know, I have a jiu-jitsu membership, you know, I go to my gym, I get a massage at least once a month. There are sacrifices you make to make sure that you are putting yourself at the center. And sometimes that means, you know, not, this is hard for me, but sometimes it means when you go out with friends, you don't buy all of their things for them. That's something that I've had to learn how to do. You know, and it's like, you're not, believe it or not, you are not a terrible person for financially or emotionally, like temporally or financially, spending time or money or effort on yourself instead of other people, because people that love and care about you know that you have to do that so that you can be your best self for them. They will always understand that. How do you do it? How are you so good at it?
I'm probably too good at it. Contrary to what you said about, oh, what can I do for you? I think I'm a very selfish person, because pretty much and this is why I like being single so much.
Yeah.
Because I very much enjoy every action, every thought, everything is pretty much based around what can I do for me right now to make me feel good. It's a very big priority for me. Pretty much with every decision I make, making me feel good. Maybe that's why I'm a bit scared to enter into relationships, because it's like, oh, and this is why I'm afraid of having children, because my life is no longer all about me anymore. It's now about someone else. Yeah. And then there's a lot of sacrifices, a lot of sacrifices that you have to make. Those kinds of relationships take a lot of work that I just haven't been willing to do at this point because I'm so obsessed with my own growth, my own journey, my own development. I don't feel like I'm there yet, like with any of that, constantly working. But again, are we ever going to be there? Are we ever going to be exactly the kinds of people we want to be? So I need to accept that. I haven't. Because in order to make room for those types of relationships, I just have to accept like 0.01% better every day instead of 10%, instead of 30%.
You don't think you can get 10 to 30% better every day if you have kids?
No. I think the second I have kids or a very serious relationship, it's not about me anymore. Like, I feel like having kids is like, I've done growing.
Hot take. The quickest way to get 10 to 30% better is to have your focus not be yourself. Because what's going to teach you more? What's going to humble you more in life than a fucking baby? What is going to take you out of nothing in this world is ever going to teach you more about yourself, about the world, about other people than having to care for somebody else. Now, I say this as a woman who has babied grown men in relationships. This is not what I mean. Women, if you're in a relationship where you feel like a mother, leave. But when you actually are in a serious, committed relationship, are you a healthy one? Or you have a child, right? I mean, you had a young mother on your podcast a while ago. Yeah. What's her name?
Hannah Brannigan.
Hannah. And I remember her talking about how as soon as she had that child, everything changed. Her priorities completely shifted. And it probably scared the shit out of you. She said everything is now about the child. And you were like, fuck that. But what stuck out to me as well is that, yeah, it becomes all about the child. But that doesn't mean you stop growing. It just means maybe it's a little less intentional. Maybe it's a little less like, oh, well, I don't have time to read my quote book in the morning. And I don't have time to do all these things. But like, I look at my brother. My brother and his wife are in their early mid-30s. They have two beautiful children. And my brother is still like, yes, their time is consumed, right? Of course it is. But I think there's something about having kids, especially where they're learning how to live and exist as tiny little humans, right? And so you are also relearning a lot. And in that, you learn about yourself. It almost becomes a mirror to yourself. You see, how do I handle this? How do I actually handle it? Because you can spend weeks at a time studying philosophy, reading about this, writing about this. And until it's in practice, you have no idea how you're going to handle it. You have no idea. You could spend your entire life dedicated to like earthquake relief and how exactly you should respond. And until you're in a fucking earthquake, you have no idea how you're going to react to it. Like UFC 285. No, but you know what I mean? Like, we love to talk about things, and until we're in them, we have no idea. And I think that it's the same thing with when you have someone at the center of your world in a healthy way, you know, you learn a lot about yourself. And I don't think that you completely lose yourself. I think some people do. I think some people have kids and they completely lose track. And I think that's why people sometimes have midlife crises. Yeah. Is because they stop considering themselves. But I think it's very, very possible to do both. My brother and sister-in-law run marathons. They have two kids. They make time to marathon train every day. They're teachers. They make lesson plans for their people. They go to seminars to enhance their own knowledge. Is it easy? Absolutely not. But nothing worth having comes easy, right? Like, so I think when you get to that point, you will be pleasantly surprised at the ways that instead of intentionally, which you have been doing for your life, which is going to build an amazing foundation for you, you will unintentionally be taught quite a bit. I say this as someone with no children. I could be completely
sounds
all,
like you do.
All the mothers out there are like, you're wrong. Actually, it's not like that. But yeah, I think there's absolutely a way to do it where you're not sacrificing your own growth.
What is your relationship with alone time? Like, I know that's something that you value a lot.
I love hanging out with myself.
You're pretty great.
sometimes I agree. And sometimes I don't, but then it's just more fun because it's like, you're chaotic. But I spend a lot of time in my head. The way that I actually view my mind is like a round table, and there's just a bunch of little people up there, and they're all arguing and talking, and they're all from New Jersey, so they're just yelling all over each other at like a little table, and they're just screaming. But that's clearly why I have issues. But no, I really like hanging out with myself because I know what I like. This is why we like to masturbate, people. It's because we know what we like better than everyone else, you know? Don't get me wrong. I love spending time with friends and family, but my social battery is low. It's not great. And it's because I process, my mind moves 1,000 miles a second, a minute. Like, it's just so fast at all times. And when you're surrounded by people and things, you're retrieving data, you're processing, you're collecting, you're analyzing. If I was a sane person, I would go out, you know, maybe take in some things, like observe some things and then process it later. But the way my mind works, it has to do it all at the same time. So alone time is essential for me because I need to have time where I'm not doing 1,000 things at once. So if I can, and even if I am going out and doing things by myself, it's just me and my thoughts. You know, it's one conversation. It's not 15 that are simultaneously being collected, processed, analyzed, right? Because that's exhausting. And then also just being feeling like free to not produce a form. Like, I don't have to exist in any specific form. I can just exist as I am. Which is something I'm working on in other situations, right? Like, I will conform to, I'm not going to Sky Garden in sweatpants, right? You know, I'm not saying I necessarily want to, but, you know, sticking to myself when I'm in those situations. But alone time for me is crucial, absolutely crucial. I think I would actually perish without it. And what it looks like, it depends, right? That goes back to checking in with what I need. Because in the past, I think I had alone time and it wasn't what I needed. Right? I'd get home after a long day. So many people do this. You come home after a long day, you get everything done, you get in bed, and you put something on. Netflix, YouTube, anything, to get your mind off of things. And that was good to get my mind off of things, but then I went to go to bed and all the things are still there. So alone time for me has become ritualistic. It's very much a process of what do I need and how can I serve myself? Because I still love doing acts of service. But I'm learning to not overexert outwardly, you know, not putting all of my time and energy into acts of service for other people. I still love doing that and I'm learning how to do it for myself. Making huge breakfasts with coffee, sitting outside reading the paper is like a big thing for me. I love that. Reading, huge. Writing, huge. Sitting in the trees, napping on the ground in the forest, big. Love that.
Is that cozy?
Yeah. When the sun's out, yeah. When the sun's out, absolutely. Does the ground feel good? Well, you're laying on like tree roots, so not really. But like the sun is the best blanket you'll ever have. I highly recommend. I've gotten yelled at for this before because they're like, don't you feel like something bad can happen to you? And I'm like, probably, but I'm in the middle of the forest. Like, how are they going to find me? But no, like, and the other thing I hear sometimes, okay, I talk a lot about going outside. If you're not a nature person, that's fine. I don't know. I am someone who's like spiritually connected to nature. Like what I assume people feel when they talk about God is what I feel in nature. But if that's not you, if like your nature is like video games, good on you. You know, like, you know yourself better than anyone else. I hate watching like self-help videos where it's like, you have to do this. This is it. And I'm like, dude, that's not it for everybody. It's not. But I don't know, like, that's something that's been really, really big for me lately is like alone time, not just in the sense of like rest. Alone time, like doing shit. Like I said, like when I'm in Norfolk and I'm on the way to something or I'm out there for uni and just being like, I'm going to go to this museum now because I've decided that that's what I want to do right now. You know, I love that shit. And I love listening to myself. Because I think you have many selves and I think the intuitive one gets buried because the practical, logical, everyday applications ones talk over them and they're loud New Jersey accents. And when you get to the one at the bottom, that's your intuition, your gut, your third eye, whatever you want to call it. That one can tell you a lot. That one is very in touch with like your rawest self. And I think it's impossible to listen to it without practiced alone time, muscle memory alone time. If you sit by yourself in a room for 1 hour once a week, I don't know if you're going to get there, right? It's a practiced thing. If meditation's your shit, meditate. If you want to do yoga, do yoga. If you want to punch a bag, that's big for me. I will elbow the shit out of a heavy bag. Put the heavy bag
punching
on the ground.
Punching things is underrated. People don't realize how beneficial, not only physical, health-wise, it gets you shredded. Okay. Punching things, boxing, jujitsu, kickboxing, all that stuff that we love. But also, it is such an amazing stress relief. I wrote a post on my Substack, which I know you're a big reader of. Thank you. The other day about changing your state. Are you really in a bad mood? Is your life really falling apart? Or do you just need to change your state? Do you need to go out in nature? Do you need to go hit stuff? Do you need a hot shower or a hot bath? Right. So the next time that you feel like the walls are caving in on you, ask yourself, is this thing really that bad? Or am I just in my own head right now and I need to do something just to take me out of my own head?
Am I in despair or could I elbow a heavy bag and feel much better? No, I think you're completely right. That's my coffee and pastry philosophy. That's exactly what it is. I'm like, I have permanent scars on my hands because one morning my mother told me that the jeans I was wearing were too small for me and I just lost my fucking mind because I felt terrible about myself. This probably isn't something I should be saying. It's not my proudest moment. But I just like punched the shit out of a wall and then the rest of my day was ruined, right? And then looking back on that, I'm like, you literally could have gone to a coffee shop, sat down, had a little espresso, had a little croissant, and been fine. It's exactly what you said. It's changing your state. Now, if you were like me and you have those moments where you punch a wall, that's also okay. It happens. Happens to the best of us and the worst of us, you know? It's fine as long as it's not a person that you're hitting. Unless it's sanctioned. Anyways, we love sanctioned violence here. But no, I think you're completely right. Punching shit is overrated and changing your state is essential. When things start adding up, especially, I think that's where people get really like, it's like a accumulation of things. And then you're like, oh my God, my life's falling apart. Like I can't deal with this many things at once. I feel that way. And then I go to jujitsu, you know, or I feel that way. And then I go sleep outside. you know, finding what recharges you, what resets you, like there, whatever your reset button is, find it and use it obtusely. Like that, underrated. Computer overheats, we turn it off and we turn it back on again. Which leads me, I want to talk about this.
What?
Sleep, people.
Thank you. I also want to talk about this. You draw a line in the sand for your sleep, a line in the sand that most people don't.
It's not that, in it's the sand. It is a wall. It's a brick wall.
Yeah. It's usually the thing, you know, on the pillars of health that is usually the first to go. You know, I need to be more productive tomorrow. I have this, and this to do. The first thing, the first place you'll look to cut time is, all right, I'll sleep for an hour less. I'll wake up earlier. I'll go to bed later. You do not do that. You do not believe in that. If there's one thing you are giving yourself right now above anything, it is, I need 8 hours of sleep. Why is that?
When I see people who are struggling in their lives, my first question, no matter what you're struggling with, is how much are you sleeping? How much are you sleeping? Now, I will preface this. I have chronic fatigue. So if I don't get 8 hours, it is very different for me than I think people who do not suffer from a chronic illness or chronic fatigue. However, it's still very important. Something I learned the other day, fun fact, is that men need about, you know, they can do with 6 to 8 hours of sleep. Women need 8 to 10 hormonally. Now, men, if you personally feel like you're like, well, actually, I feel like shit if I don't sleep like 10 hours, then sleep 10 hours, please. Like, listen to your body. But no, sleep is something that I will never sacrifice because I know, if you are someone that doesn't get good sleep, you know that the next day you don't feel as good. And that's something that most of the time, not all of the time, if you work weird hours, if you have insomnia, there are many things that come in the way of
getting
a good night of sleep. But for the most part, it is something in our control, you know? I've caught myself many times being like doing something just because. I'm like, well, it's only 8:30. And I'm like, bitch, go to bed at 8:30. Like, if you can, try it. It's taken me a while, right, to find a rhythm and a routine that gets me into deep rest. And the reason I related sleep to a reset is because I think there are two types of sleep. I have no basis for this scientifically, by the way. When we put our laptop in sleep mode, it doesn't turn off. Like, we can put our laptop in sleep mode and we can turn it off. Now, when you open your laptop from sleep mode, it comes right back up, right? When you open your laptop from it turning off, you have to turn it on, put in a password, etc. Think about when you get like a shitty night of sleep and you wake up in the morning and you're like groggy, but you're like, I'm awake and you're like doing things, right? Like, for me, the reason I need an ample like hours, like a number of hours of sleep is because I need it to be restful. You know, so I'll sleep 10 hours, but I'll get 8 good hours of rest, and that will fully recharge me for the next day. Now, I have chronic fatigue, so I'm also probably going to take a nap at some point. You know what I mean? But for most people, if you can find it so that you can like give yourself enough time to get into REM sleep, give yourself enough time to get into rest. Because I think what happens is people, they can't fall asleep. So then they finally go to sleep. They didn't have that a routine that will get them into a deep rest. They're not feeling rested. They're going to sleep because they're like, oh, I have to sleep now. They wake up. They don't feel rested. They never got into deep sleep because they're not giving themselves enough time to get into deep sleep. That's another thing, like being like, oh, I have to go to bed by this time. And then feeling like, you know, that's something I used to struggle with because I've always been big about getting a certain number of hours of sleep. So I used to freak out and be like, oh, fuck, like I gotta wake up at 6. It's 10:03. I'm only getting 7 hours and 57 minutes. Fuck, like... You know, don't give yourself enough time to not worry about that and give yourself a routine. I listen to sleep music every night. I have one track that I like. I listen to it every single night. Put your fucking phone down. You're not going to sleep looking at it. And this is coming from someone that like, yeah, I'm going to look at it before I go to bed because that's what I do. But don't expect to put your phone down and immediately go to sleep. Because scientifically, that's something I can say. We know that that doesn't work. We know that's like it's a fact, right? That has been proven. The closer you look to a screen, the longer it's going to take your mind to shut off. But just give yourself that time. Breath work, yoga nidra, like anything that's going to help you get into rest. Body scanning. You're familiar with body scanning? Highly recommend. Just checking in with your body before you get into sleep. There's this therapy called craniosacral therapy. Which scientifically, don't know if it has any merit, but as a meditation technique has been incredible for me. It's basically they're touching different points in your head and neck, which again, scientifically, no fucking clue if it does shit. But my therapist, the person that does it, does breath work with me, and it's the most rest I've ever felt in my life. And it's like 60 minutes. So finding what puts you in that state of like almost paralysis like rest, that is what is essential. And then when you get up in the morning, give yourself time. Every single day on my calendar, I have 6 to 7 blocked out and it says morning. And in that time, like for me, this is what I like to do. It's gonna be different for everybody. For me, like I get up, giant glass of water, cup of black coffee, paper, work, read something. Like that is how I like to wake up in the morning. But give yourself that space, you know? Like for me, it is literally like getting up and within 30 minutes, I'm like productive because I'm a morning person. But like if it's giving yourself an hour to fully become present in the world again, your laptop has to reload when you turn it off, people. Like you need to reload when you fully turn off. So this is not a sleep advertisement. It is a restful sleep. There is a difference. You know the difference. Do what you can to get restful sleep. It'll change your life.
I hate sleep. because I love life so much, I love being awake.
Yeah.
So
this is where we differ. Yeah. I hate being awake.
I know everything you just said. I co-sign. I've read all the studies. Sleep is the thing that we lack the most but need the most. I'm fully aware of this. It's just some type of mental block in me that's just like, I just love being awake. I love rising with the sun. I love getting things done before everyone else is. I love being productive.
Hey, you know how to do that?
How's that?
Go to bed earlier. And then you wake up with the sun every day and you get things done before everybody else.
This is why I don't watch movies. I don't watch TV. The only reason I watch fights is because I get paid to do it. If I weren't getting paid to do it, I probably wouldn't be doing it. I don't watch anything because those hours from 8:30 to midnight or whatever, people are usually watching things and doing mindless consumption things. I don't really do that. I do go to bed early. I still go to bed at like 10 and wake up at like, or, you know, in London, it's been a bit weird because my body clock is all messed up. Yeah. But in my normal East Coast existence, usually bed 10 to 11, maybe 9:30 to 10:30, and then wake up at, you know, 5:30. I try to get 7.5. 7.5 is my sweet spot, but I think I could definitely benefit from more sleep. I want to get you out of here on this. Thank you for joining me, Sarah. You're incredible, and everyone should go follow you and like eat up everything that you do and support you endlessly. You said that you'd been learning from me, you know, and observing me the past few days. I observed you yesterday when we were at the coffee shop. So we went there. I was like, I have some work to do. Big UFC 285 weekend, a lot to do. Let me bring my laptop to the coffee shop. And so did that. I got my laptop out. You got your book out. And then my food came. I ordered some incredible avocado toast. And then I was like, you know what? I want to enjoy this. And I want to be here with Sarah. And I feel like a lot of people, put someone else across from me that's not you, would see me like, okay, I get my toast and they're off doing their thing, whether it's reading their book or on their phone or whatever. They wouldn't put the book or the phone away. They would probably just keep consuming while I'm eating or whatever. But you've made the very conscious decision, all right, I'm closing my book because Troy is now not on his laptop anymore. He, you know, wants to be with me and I want to be with him. Why did you do that? Why is that important for you? Because that's something that a lot of people don't do. And it's arguably my biggest pet peeve in life. I've been on this rant before. The phone on the table at breakfast, why are we doing it? Why are you being anywhere else but here? Because being here, as this is what the pandemic taught me, being here with other people is like the greatest thing ever.
Yeah. I think if you made a list of things that I value in life, I think connection and conversation is at the top of the list. Because for me, it's like, it's not something I have to think about. It's not like, oh, let me consciously put this book away right now. It's like, oh, well, we're going to have a chat. That's why we're here. That's why I'm here, right? I'm here to spend time with you. So that's what I'm going to do. But also I think in general, and something I've been working on as well is like when you have such a like schedule, right? It's hard to make time for conversation. One of my international mentees, I mentor international students, is from Kenya. She says, if we have a lecture class, it starts at 9, lecture starts at 10, and then we actually leave at like 11:45. So the lecture is only from 10 to 11. But you're there from basically 9 or 9:30 until like noon. She's like, that's because you get there, you chat before class, you have class, and everyone talks, hangs out, chats after class. Like it's built into their lives is time for conversation. Think about how many times you've been on your way to do something or you're living your life, you're out, you're doing things, and you start to have a conversation with someone. You look at your watch, you're like, oh, I gotta go. I'm trying not to do that. Like I have now accepted, I'm someone that hates being late. I hate it. But you know what I hate more than being late? Missing the opportunity to learn from someone else, missing the opportunity to form a connection, and not in a way that's like, not in a networking way. Like if I never see this person again, that's okay. It's more like a, tell me about you. The amount of stuff we can learn from other people. Like if I could talk to every single person on the street and ask them about their childhood, their life, their upbringing, what they've learned in the past week, I would. And I know you value that. That's why part of why you do this podcast, right? So it's that. It's true. And our conversation was amazing. You know, I learned so much about you, what you value, your life. But I also learned about myself because when you talk to people, sometimes you say things and then afterwards you go, huh, okay, didn't know that, you know? So it's yes, it's a conscious decision, right? Like, oh, I'm putting the book down now. But it's something that comes very easily because it makes sense, right? Like why would we, I can read this book anywhere at any time. I cannot have this conversation. Every single person you meet is gonna die. At one point or another, you have no idea when. Talk to them while you can, talk to as many people as you can, not in an obnoxious way. don't go bothering people that are reading alone in coffee shops, please. But you know, like if you have the opportunity to, talk to people. They are going to teach you more than anything in this world can ever offer you. It's why I study language. It's why I read. It's why I've honed in on conversation skills, even though I'm not a social person. It's because every time I leave a conversation with someone, a true conversation that we learn about each other, I leave it feeling fulfilled. I leave it feeling more knowledgeable, and I leave it feeling like a better person for having done it.
I've certainly learned a lot from you today, Sarah, not only today, but literally every time I talk to you. It's why I value having you in my life so much. I mean, you're 21, but you have so many years of experience, so much wisdom, and I know that you have only scratched the surface of your potential. I know you're going big places, and I literally cannot wait to be on the journey with you. So thank you for being here in London. Thank you for joining me on the podcast, and thank you for being you. You are one of a kind and never change.
Thank you. Love you, Troy.
Love you too. How incredible is Sarah Rose? She is truly an inspiration. She's gone through so much in her life, and at age 21 is one of the most intelligent people I've ever met. She is so full of wisdom and wants to spread that to anyone who will listen. I know I've certainly learned a lot from her. And one thing I always say about friendships is if they're not really making you better in any way, if they're not providing you value in terms of maybe it's laughter or fun experiences or adventure or knowledge, then what's the point of having those people around? Sarah Rose, for me, has been an incredible friend, resource. We think very similarly. So it's been great to have her in my life because we think about a lot of the same things, a lot of things that other people maybe don't think about. It's so funny. She got me a gift when she came to London, and I got her a gift, and we both got each other a book of inspirational quotes. She got me a book of quotes from Maya Angelou, and I got her a book of quotes from Franz Kafka, and we're just sharing some of these quotes back and forth with each other. So it's really great to have someone like her in my life, and I hope you all were able to take something away from that conversation. And if you liked it, just let me know. Leave the Found Generation podcast a 5-star review on Spotify or do so on Apple Podcasts. But let's be honest, Spotify is better. Next time I talk to you, I'll be joining from Kailua Beach, Hawaii. Maybe I'll do the next podcast on a beach, on a mountain. Who knows? The world is taking me all sorts of incredible places that I don't even know where I'm going half the time. But I hope you have a great rest of the week. And I will talk to you all again.